We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast, where this time I am thrilled to be joined by Norm Lanier. Norm is the CEO of Lone Star Art. It is a, you can feel it in your hands, wood, metal, signs, really, really authentic art that is made in his, I'm going to say workshop, but it's way bigger than that, based in Texas. Norm has been doing this stuff since 2004. He is an OG in the e-commerce space, and the business evolved in a big way around 2016 and saw a big boost and a big upturn for Norm and his company. The company itself is a seven-figure company that recognizes its responsibility to do good in the world as they grow, and every single month they donate to no-kill animal shelters, as well as having a specific division where parts of the proceeds are donated to local community things like community theatre, for example. Norm, even though his business has grown so large, is still involved on the day-to-day in the artwork side of things, really putting his touch and his eye to detail into every piece of art that is lovingly made in their workshop, in their manufacturing. They own all of that side of the business. So I am really excited to get into this, original print-on-demand company, if you like, that was formed before the words print-on-demand really existed in the space. So without further ado, let's welcome him to the stage. Norm, how's it going?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me, Martin. I appreciate it.
I'm stoked to have you on. So whereabouts in the world are you, Norm?
I'm just outside of Houston, Texas in the United States.
Beautiful. So, so many things I love about Texas. So it's really, really exciting to have you on here. So your website, LoneStarArt.com. That's what we're talking about today, folks, before we go into Norm's origin story. It's got some really, really incredible pieces of artwork on it. But what I like is that it doesn't feel sort of clinical. The difference between like a comfy room and a hospital, right? And sometimes I use that analogy with Shopify stores, which is just like, it's so clinical. Like the menu bar goes here, the hero image goes here, the headline goes here, the buy button goes here. And it's just like a print by numbers, paint by numbers kind of store, and yours is, it's got that touch and that appeal and that story and that homeliness to it. So I'm looking forward to getting into that a little bit later on, but let's respect the process. And what we like to do on this show is we like to go back to where your entrepreneurial journey really kicked off, the story around that, the why behind that, and then we really go from there to present day. So if you've got a time in mind, Norm, could you take us back to that time and paint us a word picture about you spreading your entrepreneur wings perhaps for the first time?
Yeah, so I've always been a creative. I got my degree in photography and got into computer graphics back when the Macintosh was a new thing, and self-taught, and made a living working for large corporations, HP, Compaq, a bunch of other large companies as a graphic designer. And so I started kind of by accident. And the first business that I had was making Halloween props. And that was in 2004. And that was a weird little business that just kind of took off and got a life of its own. And once people started trying to give me money, it really, really kind of motivated the entire process. And so all of that was going on as side hustles at that point in time in my life. And I kept developing these kind of side hustles, and it got to the point where I was making more of my side hustles than I was in my real job. And so I was kind of getting burned out from the whole corporate experience and everything. And I went to my wife and I said, you know, I can't keep doing this corporate thing forever. And she was concerned about insurance and, you know, can we live off the business and all that sort of stuff. So we made a deal, and the deal was that we would set aside all of my regular paycheck and put that into a savings account. And for the next year, we would just live off the business while I continued to work. And the deal was that if we didn't touch the savings during that time frame, that on my 50th birthday, I was resigning. And that's exactly what I did 2 weeks before. I went in and gave 2 weeks notice and walked away from a six-figure job to go out and do this. And it's morphed since then. But, you know, that's kind of the nutshell of how it all came about in a real quick soundbite.
I love that. I love the sort of logical, wise wife that's kind of sort of gone, you may do this if you tick this box and this box. I love that. That's what we need. We need our wives to keep us grounded sometimes when we just want to, like, you know, throw out everything and start afresh, as we entrepreneurs love to do. And
she's been a rock, and I couldn't have done this without her support. I mean, you know, she came home while I still had my regular job, and she'd get done with hers and she'd come in and help with the business and stuff. I couldn't have done it without her.
Okay. So you've quit your six-figure job and now you're going alone with a certain amount of nerves, perhaps, right? What does the first thing that you start building look like, and what point are we now? Because 2004 was when you were doing the Halloween props and so on. It was a little while, 12 months. Like, whereabouts are we right now?
Right. So when I made the transition to go full time. So what had also transpired at that point in time too was I discovered Amazon. So I heard that you could sell stuff on Amazon. So we already had a few products. And so I went ahead and we put those on Amazon, and it's like, those sell really well. Let's do more of that. And that's kind of one of the themes that I think is, about superpowers is follow the money, right? Listen to what your customers are telling you that they want, and then do more of that. And so we got into doing a whole lot of pet products and stuff. I wasn't doing that much artwork associated with the business at that point in time. It was really more physical goods that we were selling on Amazon. And then one day I was on a website and I saw a graphic design, and I thought, well, that's really a cool idea. I said, I could do something like that. And the graphic designer and the creative dove in and knocked one of these out, and we threw it up on Amazon. And sure enough, this thing sold. And it was like, okay, so let's do some more of that. And once I kind of saw this model of the, and it kind of went full circle, right? So now I was coming back to my creative roots. Now I've always enjoyed the business side and the marketing side of it, but now this kind of brought me back full circle to where the driver of the business really was the artwork itself. And so that's kind of when we made that transition and started doing more of that. And we started moving away actually from products that we were importing from China and stuff. And we started doing all of that sort of stuff, all of our artwork and everything in-house.
And beautiful.
Yeah.
So I think that's an excellent move as well. And it puts more control on the manufacturing and the quality, as well as the turnaround time and so much more. The thread I want to pull out for a moment is that feedback loop with the customer. And we can sort of move to current time briefly before we go back to the story here. So what things have you got in play in your business to keep that feedback loop going? You said listen to the customer, listen to what the customer wants. What sort of things have you got in position to empower the customer to feed back to you what it is they want?
Well, my customer service people give me feedback that they hear from customers. It's actually surprising. We have some stuff on Etsy, and we get a lot of feedback from customers that will come to us and say, hey, I like this design. Could you do this for us? And a lot of times, a lot of the ideas that we get come from that direction, from that feedback loop. The other thing is I'm a very data-driven person too. There's no reason to go and invest a huge amount of time into creating products and stuff that there isn't already a viable market for. So I go out and I have tools that give me estimates of sales and things like that on various products. And I use those tools to help me find pockets of things ideas that I would have on my own just never have thought that a niche like this would even exist. Like, you know, one of the crazy things we sell is we have a large number of signs for chicken coops. And it's a big deal, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that are into having backyard chickens, you know, for eggs and things like that. I would have never come up with that idea on my own, but just looking with the tools and finding, you know, hey, there's a lot of sales associated with that. We'll do a few and we'll see if we get traction. And when we do, we just do more of it.
I love that. And so Norm, you might not know this about me, and actually some of the audience might not either, but I used to have a print-on-demand business. It was a print-on-demand leggings business actually called ustatement.com, and it still exists. I sold it in 2018. It still exists. But what we were doing on there is we were printing, a bit like you would print on t-shirts, but we were doing it on our own custom legging blanks that we created. And we had a whole bunch of different niches, right? And chickens, interestingly, was one. I didn't do it as large as one of my friends that did massive sales with chickens. But this one might be interesting to you, particularly based on where you're based. Barrel racing was a huge niche for us, absolutely huge. When we were doing we did t-shirts and hoodies before that, and then we moved into leggings. The passion behind the predominantly women leading this horseback sport, you know, literally racing, dangerously racing on the back of their family pet, right? Like a loved family pet, you know, the pride that went with that. The, you know, we sold so many t-shirts and hoodies and leggings that sort of pushed that pride element. And man, I'm sure that's something you can lead into as a takeaway if you're not already.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what it is, right? It's about finding out what people are passionate about, and people are passionate about all kinds of things, but that really is the key, is to figure out what people are passionate about, because that is what will make them, you know, reach into their pocket and pull out their wallet, right? Because it speaks to them, it identifies, and it helps them communicate to others what they love, right? When you put that t-shirt on, it's you don't wear a t-shirt with something you hate, right? It's it's something that you have some sort of emotional connection to, and that's really what it all is. That's what sales is, right?
I used to look at it, because it took me a while to figure out why people would wear their emotions on their chest or on their leg, right? And it took me a while. I was like baffled by it. I'm a guy that wears a plain black t-shirt, right? It sort of baffled me. But it's almost like, in my head, it was almost like what people wear on their t-shirt, or, you know, they put up on the wall art or something. It's almost like, hey, you could translate it to, hey, ask me about, and then whatever the topic is on the t-shirt or the wall art, right? It's like them saying, I want to talk about this, but I don't want to be the person that comes up and goes, hey, let's talk about chickens. So they put loads of chicken stuff so that people who are also chicken people go, oh, I like chickens too. And you're like, oh, really? You know, let's talk eggs. So, you know, and it took ages to find that sort of thing, but it absolutely is passion. And where there's passion, there's that's where the sales happen. All right. So going back to your story. So at this point, we're still selling on Amazon. You're transitioning to buying sort of blanks and things from China and making things in house. What's happening next? What's evolving here as you start manufacturing more things yourselves? And is it still predominantly on Amazon, or are you selling on your own website at this point as well?
Right. So during this phase, it was a physical growth thing also, right? Because we were working out of a space not bigger than the room I'm in right now. It was a very tiny space when we first started. We didn't need a whole lot of space, but once we started manufacturing, packaging, shipping, all of these sort of things, we needed more space. So we went from this tiny little space, and I built a 900 square foot building on my property for the employees to move into. And we thought, man, this is amazing. You know, we've, you know, 5-6x, you know, the amount of space that we've got and everything. And then we got the equipment associated with doing more manufacturing, and we put 6 people in that building, and all of a sudden, all of that space didn't look so big anymore. So I actually ended up buying a house down the street from me and moving my employees and a lot of the process over there. And then again, as demand started ramping up, we needed even more space. So this time I just went and leased a warehouse, because I needed something quick. I didn't want to go through the process of trying to find another place and everything. So that made it quick and easy, and we were able to get in. And we probably tripled the amount of production capability that we had, which was a really good thing because, you know, during all of this time is kind of when the pandemic was going on full force. People were stuck at home. They were looking for things to, they were stuck in their homes and looking at their walls going, you know, that's an ugly wall. I should do something with that. And we were happy to help. So, going back, you know, the other thing that happened was, you know, there was a time where we were kind of locked down here in Houston and employees couldn't come into the office and all this sort of stuff. So I took that time to build out my Shopify store. I had dabbled with a few things before with Shopify, and I never really got traction. But this time is when I really developed the site Lone Star Art as a standalone, because prior to that, it was predominantly on Amazon and somewhat on Etsy. But Amazon was our biggest sales channel, still is. We built our own site, and that gives us complete control over customers and the full experience now that we completely own.
I love that. Yeah. So I wanted to backtrack for a second. Mm-hmm. So I've not heard this before. So you were at the point where you needed to expand, and what you decided to do was to buy, not lease, buy a house, not an office or a warehouse, a house down the street. Could you tell me a bit more about that decision making? What am I missing here?
Well, so it was interesting. So I was looking for commercial real estate, some sort of a building that I could move the business into. And I started looking around, and here in the Houston, I'm in a suburb of Houston, more remote area. There really wasn't a whole lot to choose from. And I had gone and looked at a couple of places, and they just didn't, they weren't going to work for what I needed. So then I said, well, maybe I can find a building that has like a metal barn or something that we could use, and we can use that for warehouse space and stuff like that. And it turns out that there was a house that was two blocks away from where I live. And so I called up my real estate agent. I said, I've gone over there and taken a look at it. I said, I don't think it has much promise, but I said, you know, if you don't mind, you know, can we just go inside and take a look? And it was a house that had been flipped and was completely vacant. Everything in it had been redone. And for our purposes, it worked out, you know, great. You know, the master bedroom became, you know, offices, and the living room became our packaging facility, and the game room that they had is where we moved our canvas printers and all of that. And it actually turns out to be a lot cheaper on a monthly basis to do that than it is to have the leased warehouse space that I have. But they both serve their purposes, and they're both great. Plus, you know, I get to pay myself rent. So it's kind of, and the property's increased quite a bit since I bought it just a couple of years ago. So it's worked. It's kind of gone full circle, and it's worked out really well.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that story. Paying yourself rent and having that. I feel like maybe in the UK, the houses are too close together, that probably there's some kind of zoning permit type issue with that. But like, yes. Otherwise, yeah. If it's just nothing, it's just fields and stuff around it, then yeah, we'll have at it, right? It's not going to be a interference to anyone. So brilliant. Thinking out of the box. We like that on this show. Okay, so we're in the pandemic. People are filling their ugly walls with your art. You've created your Shopify store, still selling on Amazon and Etsy, and you're also selling on Shopify. Where to now? What's going on now?
We continue to expand our product line. I'm always looking for new things to do. We started probably about a year ago, we started offering wholesale products to boutiques and small shops and stuff like that. So we're on a few different marketplaces for wholesale buyers. And that's been a nice addition, because one of the things that was scary about my business few years back was that 90% of all of my income came off of Amazon. And as great a place as Amazon is, they have their quirks too. And, you know, I've been shut down on more than one occasion. And when that's the majority, vast majority of your income, that's not a very comfortable place to be. So diversifying really has been kind of the one of the driving forces the last few years, and just, you know, spreading the wealth over a lot of different areas so that if there's a problem on one, you still got all of these other support systems still going.
So I think that's going to be relevant to the audience. So let's really unpick that a little bit, because mm-hmm. any of the people in the audience that are selling some kind of physical product, probably that physical product could sit on a shelf somewhere. And if they're not in making a direct sort of retail relationship, sort of cutting out the sort of wholesale route of going straight to the source, but instead selling a bunch of their product to someone, so, you know, so to another business or something that can sell that thing, how do you suggest that they go about finding wholesale opportunities in their space? What sort of things should they look out for when they're sort of making those deals or setting those prices or setting up the agreements in that whole new world?
Right. So there's three different wholesale marketplaces that we deal with. And that really has been the main way that we have got in front of those sellers. Our best one is called Faire, FAIRE.com. Another is Abound. And I think it's a strange URL. I think it's Hello Abound. And the third one is Tundra.com. And what we do is we take our retail prices that we sell off of our Lone Star Art site, and we export it from them. Most of these places make it pretty easy, export out of Shopify and import into these marketplaces. And then it's uploaded with all the images and descriptions and all of that sort of stuff. And then they take just like any other marketplace, they take a cut of the total sales that come off of that. But the great thing about that too is that that's repeat business. We've been able to, as we've gotten on these markets and been on them for a while now, gotten reviews and so forth, which has been really helpful. We're getting more and more of those buyers. And then once they get our products, put it in their store, get sell through and customers enjoy it and so forth, then they become repeat customers. And that is a nice little easy thing for us to do, because it comes in. It's really not much different than any of the other channels as far as our internal systems go. And so we're able to produce those and very easily with our systems.
I like that. And so what they're doing on these marketplaces is they're getting a preferable price as long as they buy over a certain quantity, presumably, right. And then they're selling them on their business. And as they sell through them, they're coming back to this marketplace to buy more from you. Do you ever feel tempted to go to the source, so you know the people who are buying, and just set up some kind of direct deal? Or is there just no need?
Yeah, we actually have made some efforts for that. So, we do have an internal system on Shopify that allows us to set up wholesale accounts there directly, and so that customers don't need to go through a middleman. We like that because we don't have to pay a percentage to, you know, for a finder's fee on that. So we love working with clients that way. But that certainly is something that has been a really nice addition. I probably should have done it a lot sooner than I did, but there's always so many irons in the fire at any given point in time, trying to get everything set up. It's, you know, the smallest thing that we've got to work with is time, right?
Absolutely. So what about the manufacturing side of things? So there's a lot of businesses nowadays are sort of keeping themselves agile, and they're sort of outsourcing the various departments. So departments that would traditionally be within the main business, right? Like the perhaps marketing, perhaps manufacture, perhaps operations, perhaps, whatever, legal, accounting, all of these different things, customer service, all of these things are kind of not, outsourced, or at least they're in a different location. You set up manufacturing in-house, which presumably means in addition to the payroll and so on, big machines, big expensive machines that need to stay up, need to be used in an efficient way to maximize what you get out of them, need to be serviced, replaced, upgraded, all of that kind of stuff. Like, how does someone get into that? I mean, from a cash flow point of view, from a sort of thinking, mental bandwidth point of view, like, how do people get into that?
Right. So for me, it was, I, again, being a creative, having somewhat of a technical and printer background already, I kind of knew the space to a degree. The first thing that we did was we went out and Googled it and tried to find trade shows that spoke to our business, right? And so we made myself, my wife, and my production manager made a trip up to Indianapolis and went to a trade show there where we could talk with the manufacturers and see the processes and talk about materials and cost, all of these sort of things. And once we did that, I felt really comfortable in investing in the equipment because, the profit margins are pretty decent when you're manufacturing your own goods. Now there's other expenses that come with that, like, expensive equipment and warehouse space and those sort of things. But it gave us a lot of advantages. The biggest one being like being able to control production during peak times, like around Christmas time, right? And I'd heard so many horror stories of these businesses that, outsourced everything in their production. And I mean, I've seen businesses almost destroyed because the manufacturer couldn't keep up with the demand because everybody else is doing exactly the same thing at the same time. Having it all in-house gave me complete control over the entire process. We can monitor everything. And if we get into a situation where, we're getting overwhelmed, we can just start turning things off. And so, because I never want to be in a situation where I'm not going to be able to get, someone that's ordered something in, first week in December and not going to get it for Christmas. Well, that's just not going to happen with me, we're going to do whatever it takes to get that into that customer's hand because we want a good experience for them. And
absolutely.
And I'm happy to just turn things off. I'm not going to just take somebody's money and then not deliver a product in a respectable amount of time. Things happen, and when they do, we do everything we can to make it right. But I'm never going to put myself in a situation where my back's against the wall and I can't deliver.
I like that. And so I want to change pace for a moment and talk about the charitable side of your business. Mm-hmm. So as we said in the introduction, you donate every month to No-Kill Animal Shelters, and then you mm-hmm. have a specific division that supports community theatre. Could you tell mm-hmm. us about the sort of decision-making that went into deciding to establish those two for good, not-for-profit sort of areas of your business? And then if you can lead into like why you feel that that's a good step for other business owners to also take.
Right. Well, we had, so with the No Kill Animal Shelter, we already had a personal relationship with that shelter. We had gotten a cat from there. We liked what they were doing and so forth. And so one of the things when we were more into the pet supply space, was like we had a dog grooming brush, and then a dollar from every sale of that dog grooming brush went to that organization. So I felt like it was a win-win. that, you know, as we sold more and more of those, that that would, you know, that they would benefit from that. And then that business got really saturated, and we kind of got away from the whole China market, but we just continued to donate, you know, the same amount or more than we were before with that particular part of it. And then I'm on the board of directors for a theater group in Houston, and it's someone that I knew that started the theater company. And I was thinking, well, you know, what can I do to help with this situation? So we set up a separate little division and everything. And then again, a dollar off of every one of those products goes to them. So, you know, every month we send them a check. And it's just one of those things that we feel like that we feel privileged, actually, to be in a position where I can create something because I had that skill, right? And once I set it up, it's relatively automated and so forth. So it allowed me to create something that gives back to the community. And we've always felt that you know, when you can, you know, try to help others with the skills and the blessings that you have.
Absolutely. All right. So at this point in the show, normally we like to mix it up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly and you can choose the speed in which you respond. Are you up for that?
Yes.
Are you two thumbs up?
All right. Let's do it.
There we go. All right. Question one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
It would definitely be an online business. There's so many different ways to do that. Gosh, you know, I mean, if probably one of the easiest ways is if I had absolutely nothing, is just putting a listing on Craigslist for a service and then find someone on Fiverr and get them to do it. And I would just be the middleman and just do an arbitrage play just to get things going almost immediately.
Love that. You could just create all the Fiverr listings on Craigslist for just a little bit more each time, adding in your margin. Love that, your broker fee.
Yeah.
What's the most common or biggest mistake that you see leaders making?
I think not paying attention to the market, right? That's got to be the one that comes to mind, because all business failures are a failure to provide a service or a good that the marketplace wants. And if you're not watching your numbers, if you're not paying attention to where the market is going, I have pivoted so many times with my business. You know, I talked about doing Halloween props, and then we were doing pet supplies and all of these things. It's following the market. It's following the money and listening to your customer. So it's got to be not listening to the market and your customer.
Who is a great leader, whether alive or dead, and why?
I guess the person that currently comes to mind as a great leader is Elon Musk. I find that I mean, the problems that he has solved for the world are huge. And to run as many businesses as he has right now, I kind of feel like he's kind of the combination between Henry Ford and, Einstein and Tesla all rolled into one. I mean, it's amazing what he has put out into the world.
Beautiful. How do you evaluate a good business deal?
Well, if I were looking for a business, it would have to merge pretty well with what we're doing. You know, since I'm into the wall decor space, obviously creative, innovative products that speak to the trends that are currently going on. I think looking at how they're generating their supplies. Are they manufacturing them? Or are they outsourcing them? I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to outsourcing. It's just not something that I want the whole business built around. And if it was a reliable source on the outside, then I would have no issues with that.
Nice. What is one of your proudest moments?
Well, I guess are we talking about personally, or are we talking about business wise? I guess
whatever feels like the answer.
I think family. You know, I think the relationship that I have with my wife and daughter is really good. They're the motivator for really what I do. And so just having, you know, my daughter's the person, I've told her this before, is she's the kind of person I would want to hang out with, even if she wasn't my daughter. She's just a very cool person. And I love spending time with her. And my wife is, like I mentioned before, has been a rock. And, she allows me, you know, she keeps me in reins. You know, when it's dinner time, it's time to, you know, I work from home. So, when it's dinner time, that's the end of the day, you know. And if it wasn't for her, I'd be sitting here in front of the computer working on, you know, new things all day long. So I rely on both of them for the support and where I'm at.
What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Let's see. Trying to think, what would be something interesting? I worked at an amusement park when I was my first job. I'm a
like
huge.
A carny?
Well, you say most people wouldn't know this. I'm a huge Disney fan. I love going to the parks and going on rides. I'm a big kid, and I'm happy to admit it. But anybody that knows me probably knows that, so that's probably not too hidden.
What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
Mornings, I go out and I get on the treadmill in the morning. First thing, I mean, like right out of bed, put on workout stuff, go out and work out, because if I don't do it, then it just won't happen. So I do that. And then I sit down at the breakfast table with my laptop and coffee, and I go through my stats every day. See where we did, you know, the previous day, you know, what were sales like, what's popular, what's moving. Keeping my pulse on what's going on. I communicate with my production manager. She starts really early. So I usually have a numbered bullet point of things that she needs answers to when I get up. So keeping in touch with what she needs is important.
What book or books changed your mindset or life?
One that I have to go back to is the 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss. When that came out and I read that, it blew my mind in a lot of different ways, because this was before people were working remote, working from home, this sort of thing. And the idea that you could start a business and that you could live anywhere in the world and that you could get people, you could outsource things. You didn't have to do everything yourself, that there were companies in India and China and the Philippines and these sort of remote places that now with the internet, that you could get them to do the work. They were making a great living, and it cost you a lot less than having to do it here. And so there were just so many things that, you know, talking about, you know, just the different things that, and it's an entertaining book on top of that. It was just a fun read. So that really kind of really opened my eyes to all, not having to do it all. And that was kind of the spark that taught me that I don't have to do everything myself. And I am not a micromanager. I hire good people. They know what their job is. they're going to make mistakes. When they make a mistake, we figure out what it is, and then we don't do that again going forward. But I don't micromanage my employees. No.
What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
Where's the next new product? For sure. Where's that niche? Where's that new product line that's out there that I haven't discovered yet? Especially if it's something new that I can get in on the beginning of. The hunt is continuous. It never stops. Every day I'm looking for new product ideas.
I used to really like Pinterest as a resource, actually, for research. Yeah. I used to have tons of boards for each space, each niche, things that people are wearing, things that people are hanging out.
And like I mentioned, tools, you know, that's there's a tool called Sorting Social. You can go in and type it in, and it will go through and start going through all the Pinterest posts that are related to that, and then it'll sort them by the ones with the most likes. So if you're looking for product ideas, that's a great way to find it, because people, that's what I want. I want social proof that people are interested in something. When you have, you know, 5,000 people that have, you know, liked or pinned or whatever, that already tells you that you're on the right path.
Absolutely. What advice would you give your younger self?
That you can do way more than you think you're capable of. That's for sure. I spent most of my life working in a corporate environment, and the idea of going out and doing something on my own was just, none of this even really started until I was in my 40s. And this idea of, you know, well, I'm too old to do this or whatever. Well, you know, I completely changed careers at 50 years old. So this idea is foolish. And, you know, I expect to be doing this for a very long time going forward.
What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Artichokes.
Artichokes. How do you eat your artichokes?
Well, a couple of ways. Either steamed with lemon and butter is great. Grilled is amazing. If you can get that, that's amazing. And then the small little ones that come in the jar, we put those on salads and stuff. We love artichokes. And I think that's off the radar of a lot of people.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And then final question, Norm, what makes you happiest?
Getting to do what I want to do while at the same time providing a service with others, right? It's I can't tell you how much of a rush to go somewhere and actually see something that we manufactured that was my idea, and now it's on a wall in a restaurant or somewhere else, and that's happened a few times, and it always blows me away, you know, because I see everything from this side of the computer where we're coming up with ideas, and I have a team that does the manufacturing for me and stuff, but to actually reconnect back to that side of things and actually know that this is going in someone's home, that they liked your design enough to you know, pull out their wallets and buy it. You forget that there's, you know, it's all about how much did we do in sales this way? How many units did we move and all this sort of stuff? But you forget that there's a human that you've touched in some way with an idea that I had. And so that's just, you know, that definitely brings me joy for sure.
That's a phenomenal answer to top off the answer around. And so just before we're wrapping up the show, I've got a question to ask you. Do you have any asks or requests of the audience listening today?
Gosh, I would love to know what where they're at in their business, or maybe they're not even in business. Maybe they just like hearing about others do it and so forth. But I'd love to find out where other people are at in their businesses and where their challenges have been, and you know, what they're excited about, all of that sort of stuff. I think that's super interesting to find out that information.
Nice. And where can they get in touch with you and or check out the things that you have for sale?
You can, you know, probably the main two points would be going to our website, lonestarart.com, L-O-N-E, not L-O-A-N. My brother's in the banking business and he couldn't figure out why he couldn't send me emails. It's like, dude, you're spelling it wrong. Come on, you should know this. But anyway, so that's it. That's a great place to connect with us. We have Facebook profile, and then our products are also on Amazon. So if you go to Amazon and type in Lone Star Art and canvas, wood sign, metal sign, whatever, our products will show up there, and then they can see a lot of the other products that we sell from there also.
Amazing. So check it out, guys. Lone Star Art, and you can find it all over the internet. For now, that brings us to the end of the show. Norm, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us. I've really been intrigued by your feedback loop with the customers, your out-of-the-box thinking with your your residential second offices and the thought process behind that, how you're kept in check with by your wife, but in a great way that is actually valuable and helpful, and just, you know, how you found a niche and a passion that has no end for you. Like, this is something that you want to do for the longest time because you love it. And I think finding that match there is something that all business owners would benefit from. So thank you so much for taking the time to share with us on the Smarter Destiny podcast today.
Thanks, Martin. Appreciate it.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.